Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, in the U.S., those who identify as LGBTQ are incarcerated at a disproportionately higher rate than the general population. For transgender people, one in six will be behind bars at some point in their life. Now, these statistics are according to the National Center of Transgender Equality. Now, once put into the prison system, these individuals are more likely to experience mistreatment, sexual and verbal abuse, and discrimination. The film, Where Justice Ends, explores the experiences of people who identify as transgender within prisons and jails across the U.S. It was produced and directed by local filmmaker George Zuber, and it will premiere Saturday, April 27th at the Outshined Film Festival. Zuber recently was awarded the festival's Angel Award, which is given to an individual that's shown support over the years to the local LGBTQ community. The festival's going on now and ends on Sunday. You can find more information, by the way, on our social media at WLRN Sundial. George Zuber joins me now in studio. George, welcome to the program.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
By the way, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
On the award, and congratulations on this film. It is, I said to you, it's a very sad movie. It is very powerful, but an important message. Why did you want to look at this intersection of transgender people and the criminal justice system? Where did the idea come from?
Well, it's actually a follow-on to an earlier movie that I did a few years ago called Just Gender. And that itself was a follow-on to an unusual part of my career. I was previously a partner with an international accounting and consulting firm. And one of my roles there was part of the diversity committee. As a result, I learned that I knew nothing about transgender people. So I did an earlier film called Just Gender, which explored the breadth and diversity of what it means to be transgender, particularly here in the United States. During the course of making that film, I learned about some of the issues that transgender people face when they're incarcerated in the United States.
And again, you tell the story throughout the film, you tell the story of many different transgender people and their experiences. The film starts off by tackling the issue of transgender people and police officer encounters. You point out about some of the assumptions that are made when a transgender woman or man is stopped by the police. What are some of the things that you heard? What usually ends up happening in those situations?
Well, I've heard repeatedly from a variety of people, both who had encountered the police as well as some of the social justice experts that work in this area, that in many parts of the country, I would say actually in large parts of the country, there's an assumption when somebody is transgender or in some way gender nonconforming that they might be doing something wrong and it may be illegal. So it's not unusual if somebody is stopped and they have a gender expression that is different than what their ID may show, that people react with suspicion that something is amiss.
You know, some of the stories, again, were in what seemed like a reenactment, I believe, at one point. But, you know, they would talk about how really at that moment, whenever the police officer found out that this is a transgender person, because they would look at the ID and say, well, wait a minute, the ID says you're a man, but I'm looking at a woman and you're telling me your name is something else. And then just everything started to go bad after that.
That's right. I think that the person that you're referring to felt that she was being treated as though she was a freak. And when that happens, a couple things can occur. Sometimes a very minor reason for a police stop becomes a greater issue because the police may be suspicious that something has occurred. Even though it may be nothing more in one instance than somebody who had a car stall along the side of the road. Or there might be an assumption if somebody is stopped on the sidewalks that they're what is called by people in the trans community walking as trans, which suggests that the police may believe that they are street walking for offering sex.
You know, we recently had a conversation, I told you about this, with Juan Sanchez, and he was the Grand Marshal for the Miami Beach Pride. He's also a retired detective from the department, and he told us about the training that Miami Beach Police Department is implementing for interacting with transgender people. Here's what he said.
Bottom line is, what we teach is, when you meet someone from the transgender community, there's nothing wrong with asking that person, how would you like to be addressed? And we've actually gotten feedback that they've been very impressed that a police officer has asked them that. Once you see a police officer doing that, the person can relax and say, okay, he's taking me for who I identify with and who I believe I am.
I mean, I want to get to this in a little bit, but, you know, just a response to that is that there are police departments around the country trying to train their officers in how to deal with all kinds of people and being sensitive to, you know, whoever you're dealing with, right?
There's a person in the film called Miss Major, who's a very, very well-respected longtime activist for the transgender community. And she points out that indeed there is greater efforts being made by a number of the police departments, particularly in some of the urban areas like Miami, Fort Lauderdale. However, as she points out, in her words, we, the transgender community, don't just live in New York, Miami, and Los Angeles. And the biggest problem often occurs in smaller communities because transgender people are found everywhere.
All right. So transgender people, as I mentioned at the beginning, incarcerated at disproportionately higher rates than non-LGBTQ people. But on top of that, transgender people of color suffer even at higher numbers. Do we ever get a sense of why that is?
Well, I think it goes back to some of the challenges that people of color face just culturally within their families. Transgender people of color often are not accepted by their families. I mean, of course, it happens across all races and ethnic backgrounds. But the problem that transgender people of color often face is if they are rejected from their families, and then they may have to find themselves dropping out of school because of being abused there. They find themselves on the street, which makes it much harder for them to get any kind of employment. And many transgender people then have to survive in the streets as best they can. And that often involves petty, nonviolent survival crimes. I think when you combine that with some degree of inherent bias about people of color seemingly working the streets, you're going to have a much higher rate. Indeed, the best statistic that I could find is that 47%, or almost half, of all Black transgender people will spend some time in prison during the course of their life. And that's both men and women. Very frankly, because transgender women tend to attract more attention than transgender men, the percentage of transgender Black women in prison is probably substantially greater than 50%.
And then when you get to, this is another interesting point that you showed in the film, is that when you get to those transgender folks who are in prison at that point, the kind of abuse they put up with, that they have to put up with, because it almost seemed like that there was no help coming from anybody within the prison system. This almost goes to the way police officers might treat some of these transgender folks, is the way prison security treats the transgender folks. It's a continuation, right?
Well, I think the problem is particularly difficult, from what I understand and my experience in working in this film, within state and federal penitentiaries. Within county jails, it can be challenging, but people tend to not stay in county jails for a long time. Although transgender people, because of the economic disadvantages they have, may find themselves unable to pay bail and therefore spend a little longer time. I think the progress that I've heard about mostly has been within county jails. Within the state and federal penitentiaries, I think transgender people face a very, very difficult time, probably among the worst of any group of people that are incarcerated.
I mean, these were heartbreaking stories of transgender people who were being physically, verbally abused, and even in some cases, I mean, raped when they were incarcerated. You know, a lot of times they're put in a cell with someone who's of the opposite gender, because again, maybe the prison guards or the prison itself, the jail, decide, no, this is, you know what, I'm not going to recognize what you think you are, what you believe you are. I'm going to recognize you for what you were before. And so they're going to put them in situations that are uncomfortable. And again, they become sexually victimized in these situations. There's a clip that we pulled. This is of Ashley Diamond, one of the women you interviewed, who was put for their security. For their security, they were put into solitary confinement. And this is a part of that clip.
And spending so much time in solitary confinement, under the harsh conditions of confinement, it's very small spaces, very inhumane living quarters. Oftentimes I was sleeping on a concrete slab that was this tall. Rats would be in my food. I'd have to knock rats off of me. It's the saddest time of my life, and I still feel like I'm in solitary confinement.
They use solitary confinement as a way to just say, this is how we're going to deal with you.
Repeatedly, I heard again and again that solitary confinement becomes a home in some respects for transgender people because they don't quite know what to do with them, especially if they complain about being abused by other prisoners. I think it's important that people understand that unlike what you might see in a TV show like Orange is the New Black, transgender people are housed not based on their expression what they actually look like to the general population, but rather based on their genitals. And as a result, especially because Black and Latino and other people that may not have the resources to be able to do sexual reassignment surgery, they end up finding themselves incarcerated with men rather than women. And as a result, you can have people who, to all appearances, you would believe as a woman with fully formed breasts and feminized facial features to be incarcerated with men.
Again, I'm talking with local filmmaker George Zuber. His new film, Where Justice Ends, it looks at the experience of transgender individuals in the U.S. prison system. It premieres at the Outshine Film Festival on Saturday. You can learn more about it on our social media at WLRN Sundial. George, I wanted to stay on this story of Ashley Diamond. Tell us a little bit about Ashley Diamond and what she was arrested for.
Ashley Diamond grew up and lived in Rome, Georgia, and she was an example of exactly what we're talking about here, and that is a person who recognized early on in her life that she identified as a woman and not as a boy. And at some point during her teen years, she felt she had to leave her home and ultimately dropped out of school because of the harassment that she received. She survived on the streets without any significant encounter with the police until she was in her early 30s. At that time, as I understand it, she was asked to pawn a miter saw. Now, if we all think of a miter saw, it cuts corners. It's not a particularly expensive. Even a power miter saw can't be worth more than a few hundred dollars. She was asked by her then boyfriend to pawn a miter saw. She took it to the pawn shop, and she was later arrested because that miter saw turned out to be stolen. The judge gave her 12 years in
years
prison
for a miter saw.
For pawning the stolen miter saw.
The Department of Justice, actually got involved in Ashley's case.
That's right. When Ashley went into prison, they stopped the hormones that she had been on for some 15 plus years, which of course is cutting off a very, very serious medication that these people like Ashley have to live with to be able to express in their preferred gender identity. That was just, of course, the beginning salvo because she did experience all kinds of verbal harassment, physical assault, and repeated rapes in prison. She appealed, and her family appealed, to the Georgia government to try and find some relief from this treatment.
That's an interesting point, by the way. Just to interrupt real quickly, you talked about the hormone therapy, and you pointed this out with a number of the different stories that you had, in the movie, in that people, they would end up incarcerated, and then their therapy would end, that the prison would just refuse at that point to continue, but that there's actually, like, it's physically dangerous for some people to get off the therapy. They have to continue on it. It's not just because of it helps them in, again, expressing themselves as they see themselves, but it could actually have, there could be withdrawal effects.
These are powerful drugs, and they affect a person's most basic physical being. And so to withdraw those drugs puts people through all kinds of very painful, both physical and psychological difficulties.
Something else you point out in the film is a law, an act, I should say, that was put into in effect as a law going back more than 15 years. This is I'm talking about the 2003 PREA Act. This is the Prison Rape Elimination Act signed into law. What are the guidelines of PREA? What is it supposed to do?
Well, PREA requires any prison or jail that receives federal assistance to take steps to make sure that inmates are not subject to undue physical and sexual abuse.
And because, as you said, many of the people who shared their story, you know, that's what they talked about. They talked about so many of these cases, how they were sexually abused by, more often than not, other prisoners.
Indeed, it's interesting because it's the history of PREA that probably first got me interested in doing this film, because I learned in making the prior film, Just Gender, that one particular transgender woman had been incarcerated in the late 1980s. She endured, while in Terre Haute Federal Penitentiary, she endured all kinds of abuse, including repeated rape. Unlike other people at that period of time, when transgender people were barely known, let alone recognized, she refused to accept that abuse in silence. And she brought on her own a lawsuit against the warden, against the Federal Bureau of Prisons, asserting that she and her constitutional rights were being abused by the treatment she received in prison. And as you might imagine, because she brought this what's called pro se or on her own, the courts repeatedly dismissed her case. But she persevered and continued to appeal the case until it ultimately went to the Supreme Court. And in 1994, the Supreme Court, in a case called Farmer versus Brennan, ruled in her favor, that indeed it was unconstitutional treatment that she was receiving. And it was, in fact, because of that Supreme Court decision that the U.S. Congress, 9 years later, enacted the Prison Rape Elimination Act, or PREA.
And it took years then after that for guidelines from the Justice Department, for the guidelines on how prisons are supposed to be treating people.
In fact, not only did it take years, but it wasn't until, I believe, 2015 that the Department of Justice first tried to even measure whether or not PREA was being implemented as required by the law.
Real quickly to finish up here is, you know, what do you hope people take away from this film? You know, is it more about the treatment, you know, maybe the way that we look at transgender people, or the criminal justice system?
Well, actually, I'm hoping it's both, because I think that the treatment of transgender people in the U.S. justice system and in prisons highlights some overall problems that need to be dealt with. And I think sometimes we forget these are real people who are entitled to human rights that we need to address right now.
Again, it is such a heartbreaking movie, but it is such a powerful story, and fascinating to hear all of these different transgender people come forward. And I have to applaud them just for having the strength to tell their story, because it's really, some of it's very disturbing.
And let me just mention, as you pointed out, the premiere is this Saturday, and Ashley Diamond will be at the premiere as part of a Q&A following the film.
That is again, she's one of the people who's highlighted in the movie. So it's great to know about that. Thank you so much. And there is, by the way, another screening on Monday.
That's right, because we have Eshe Diamond here for this premiere on Saturday at the Allen Shine Film Festival. We're also having a benefit screening at the Gateway Theater in Fort Lauderdale, and she'll be at the Q&A following that as well.
That's fantastic. And we'll have all this information, by the way, on our social media. So if you are interested in checking it out, that way you'll know which one you can get to. Again, local filmmaker George Zuber. His new film is Where Justice Ends. Again, looking at the experience of transgender individuals in the U.S. prison system, premiering again at the Outshine Film Festival on Saturday. George, congratulations again. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the
story. Thank you so much.
All right, still to come, a group of sixth graders in Broward just won a national competition about understanding where our food is coming from and how far it travels. All of that coming up next.